This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. With all the dysfunction in Washington these days and the sequester fiasco, research funding has taken quite a hit. But there are still those intrepid young scientists making a career choice to devote themselves to their dreams in research. Well, here with us is one such individual. Chris Lucchese is a graduate student in pharmacology at Upstate Medical University, and he's here with us to tell us about it. Welcome, Chris. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So you're a grad student in pharmacology. Tell us what that means. What exactly is that?
Well, unlike what most people might think, I actually don't study drugs like pharmacology. I'm more focused on different proteins that are involved in cancer metastasis and seeing if there's oncogenes or tumor suppressors and what they might actually do in cancer cells.
So your focus really is cancer?
Yes.
And what the underpinnings for either the growth and development of cancer or what might suppress it?
Exactly. I focus mostly on breast and colon cancer. So that's what I primarily work on, breast and colon cancer cell lines, to see what's going on in those cell lines.
So how did you get involved in this kind of thing? What led you to thinking about working in this arena?
Well, I got lucky in high school. My school actually had a biotechnology center. So I remember the first experiment we did, we took bacterial cells and we transformed them with pGlo, which is a GFP expressing protein. And we made these bacteria cells glow under fluorescent lights. And from that time, I was hooked onto research. So I did, from college, I did research. And then the next progression was grad school.
Wow. So why cancer, though? Is there something about cancer that was I mean, obviously, cancer is the great killer these days, mm-hmm. and one of the last frontiers, so to speak, of, you know, taking so many lives. But was there something about cancer that...
Well, I remember in AP biology when we started learning about cancer and realizing that it's nothing really crazy. It's really your body, and then it gets a mutation, and then your own cells are starting to propagate at an uncontrolled rate. So it wasn't like there was a virus or something that you can just target and kill, but it's your own body that's going haywire. So that intrigued me that you have a cell system in your body that is mutated, and then it more or less learns how to survive at a better rate. So it's a more advanced cell line, I guess you can say. So it always intrigued me that your own body is learning to survive better, but ultimately this leads to your demise. So it was kind of this fascinating...
It's ironic, system. Isn't it?
It is very ironic.
There's kind of a huge irony to the whole thing.
It is. I mean, cancer cells are learning to survive better than your normal system.
Tell us why you say better. That's an interesting perspective. I've never heard that before, because most people think of cancer as the great invader, the poison, you know, somehow it's taken over our being, so to speak.
Yeah, so by taking over, it means it's surviving better. They learn how to use metabolites better. They cause their own vascularization, different circulatory systems, all of that. So in essence, they're learning how to evade all of the normal systems that end up causing cell death, like apoptosis. And they learn how to use different metabolic systems in order to survive in different, you know, niches in your body. So they are effectively...
But by their sheer growth and development, they overtake important organ structures.
Exactly.
They interrupt the natural functioning of the body. Mm-hmm. So exactly what you said, they may survive better in their little world, but the whole organism is going to be destroyed as a result.
Exactly.
That's very interesting. Yeah. You had some personal experience with cancer yourself?
Yeah, when I was 17, I got diagnosed with a neuroblastoma in my maxillary sinus, which was kind of rare for a neuroblastoma.
And that's an eye tumor?
If I remember correctly, neuroblastomas are usually a childhood cancer, and it's, I think, in the stomach. Oh. So I had it in my right maxillary sinus, which was pretty weird. Surgeons were kind of confused when they saw that.
Mm-hmm. And you obviously were successful in treatment.
Yeah, I had the whole resection done when I was 17. Then I went through chemotherapy and radiation and all that lovely stuff. So I'm 10 years out now, so thank God, but everything seems to be clear.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. So did that enhance your interest, though? I mean, obviously you seem, in a sense, almost awestruck by the power of cancer, but at the same time, you yourself were a victim,
I wouldn't say that it was like the driving force to studying cancer. I knew I wanted to before, and then having had cancer myself, I think it just made it easier for me to have... When you think about cancer therapy, you think about the patients. And having been a patient, I understand what it means when they say creating a drug with less cytotoxic effects and things of that magnitude. So in that sense, I think it was easier for me to study the cancer in the progression of the drugs, because I understood what we ultimately wanted to achieve.
You had more empathy and compassion, I would think,
exactly,
as you said, for the side effects and all the problems. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen. I'm here with grad student Chris Lucchese, and we're talking about a career in cancer research. We're just a career in research, in fact, but you have chosen cancer. So what's going to happen? I want to get into some of the details of your research, but how do you envision, you know, yourself going forward? What's the plan?
Well, after you get X amount of publications, then a committee decides whether or not they think you're fit to be a PhD. So then you defend your dissertation. And then from there, we have postdocs, which is you move on to another university or possibly industry, and you work for a few years until you finally figure out where you want to go. I mean, you can take two paths. You can do industry or you can do academia. You know, industry, I guess you can say you don't have as much freedom in the research, but if you stick with academia, then you can focus on what you really want to do.
But in just to clarify here, if you're in industry, they're funding your research. If you're in academia, do you need to then go out on and find grants?
Yes.
And that's where the whole government issue and the NIH issue and all of the sequester issue may play a role.
It's difficult right now to find funding. I mean, even as a postdoc, to find funding is pretty complicated. And a lot of professors are having issues finding funding. So the whole academia aspect of where to go after you get your PhD is, it's more daunting now than I think it ever has been. It's just more difficult to find positions in labs. I mean, there's a lot of labs that are willing to have you, but they don't have the funding to support you. So you can get your own funding, but again, that's short as well. So the whole aspect of academia is kind of...
It's tragic because that's really where our future lies in terms of breakthroughs, in terms of research. Because if you depend solely on, you know, working in a business or in, you know, some kind of a entrepreneurial setting, then they're only going to research things that might in fact pay off for them
exactly.
financially. Whereas in academia, hopefully people are looking for the public interest. I mean, they're willing to study things that might help all of us, whether there was big bucks behind it or not.
Exactly. And I also think that we're also hurting a lot of the up-and-coming scientists. You have a huge pool of very bright people that are coming out, but they can't find jobs, so then they're taking jobs elsewhere that might not be, you know, research or science-related anymore just to make ends meet. And it's really sad. I think the whole downhill effect of all the sequestration is that we're going to end up hurting our whole scientific field in the long run. And I think we're starting to see
that
now.
It could really set us back years.
Exactly.
Yes, especially when you think of how long it takes to undertake any kind of significant breakthroughs in research. You need steady and consistent support over time,
exactly.
over long periods of time. So tell us about your research projects currently. What exactly are you looking at?
So I'm working on a tumor suppressor protein that was found in esophageal cancer cell lines. And what was interesting about this protein is in most cancers, it's downregulated because of a short tandem repeat that causes a chromosomal deletion.
I'm going to stop you there because that was a lot of jargon.
Yeah.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, help us understand in lay terms what you meant.
Okay, so tumor suppressors are genes that are expressed that would cause the death of a tumor cell or cancer cell.
So in other words, it's going to really kind of cut to the chase. It's going to undercut this cancer gene, the cancer cell that you suggested before was almost Herculean, could beat out everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And a tumor suppressor really kind of is basically the thing that's going to undercut it.
Exactly. I mean, it helps stop its spread and its growth. On the contrast, you have oncogenes, which propagate cancer. They help it survive. They help it metastasize. So my gene is a really small protein, which was fascinating, in that when I make cancer cells, so we can grow cancer cells in petri plates, like breast cancer cell lines, colon cancer cell lines. If I make these cells re-express this protein, it kills them all. So that was fascinating. And then when we take what we consider non-tumorigenic cell lines, so it's not a breast cancer cell line anymore, it's just a breast cell line. It's the closest thing we can grow in a lab that's a normal cell line, and I re-express this protein, it doesn't kill them. So we are finding that...
So it's targeted just to the cancer cells.
And then the story got really interesting when we found that there was a single somatic point mutation. So on the amino acid...
What does that mean?
Yeah, so the proteins are made up of amino acids. And if you change one of these amino acids to a different amino acid, it turns this tumor suppressor protein into an oncogene. And it actually converted multiple drug resistance.
Okay, so you took something that would suppress or kill a cancer cell, and by changing the chain of amino acids, you made it one that would make cancer cells grow?
Exactly. It helped protect them against chemotherapies. So that was fascinating. It was just one single amino acid substitution caused the complete opposite effect in these
wow.
cells.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds pretty intense. I mean, that sounds pretty cutting edge in terms of...
Well, I think the more relevant is that because it was from a patient sample, we found these mutations, that if, you know, I think cancer therapy is going more towards patient-specific therapies. So if you can...
Targeted, it's kind of what they call individualized targeted
exactly.
therapy.
So if you can...
Personalized.
If you can cut out a tumor from somebody, do pathology on it, and realize that it has this mutation, well, then you'll know what chemotherapies not to use because they're not going to be effective for these cancer cells.
So you're just... You're basically defining the mechanisms as to how that would work.
Exactly.
And the point is that was what will enable us in the future to perhaps resect a tumor, analyze it sufficiently, and then develop the treatment that will really be most effective.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cutting edge, I'd say.
I was excited when I found it.
I think so. So in a little bit of time, tell me, what do you hope to accomplish then, both in the short term and then maybe as you look ahead?
I think the first thing is to graduate, because this will be my fifth year, so it'd be nice to move on to bigger and better things.
And then you would have your doctorate at that
exactly,
point.
Exactly, I'd have my PhD. Mm-hmm. So then from there, I'd like to go back to the West Coast, where my family is, and hopefully either get into academia, if there are positions, or stick to industry and continue doing cancer research or cancer therapies or anything. And I'm open to anything, but I'd like to stay within the cancer field.
And do you have have you imagined what you hope to kind of have accomplished, let's say, in 5 years from now or 10 years from now?
Well, I think that's hard to imagine, but I would love to have found maybe a better therapy or other ways to treat without so much cytotoxic effects, so the patients aren't suffering as much during treatment, because having gone through it myself, the chemotherapy and radiation isn't the most delightful thing to go through. So if we can find a combination of different therapies that make the side effects less, I think that would be, I'd call that a success.
I would too. How would you counsel other students at this point who might be contemplating a career in research? What would you tell them?
Make sure that you want to do it. I think a lot of people jump into research and think that it's easy and it just, you kind of do it. It actually takes a lot of, I would say,
discipline.
Discipline, yes, but you also have to, every day sometimes it's redundancy and it can drive you a little wild if you're doing the same thing for 6 months and it's working, and then all of a sudden it doesn't work and you have no idea why and you're beating your head against the wall for months and getting nothing. So
you have to have determination.
Exactly.
And a lot of patience, it sounds like.
Patience, yes. It becomes sometimes a little daunting, and then all of a sudden something works and then you're excited again.
Well, I'm excited very much to have met you and to hear what you're doing, because it sounds like our future and the hope of cancer, finding a cure for cancer, is in the hands of people like you. And it's a real treat and an honor to meet you, and I hope you continue in this path. I can only imagine that you'll be very successful. My guest has been Chris Lucchese. He's a graduate student in pharmacology at Upstate Medical University, and he's come to tell us a little bit about his research and how a career in cancer research can be incredibly fulfilling. Maybe you'll come back sometime to tell us a little bit about any other breakthrough findings you have.
Of course.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.